It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard around the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young. And Nancy Pelosi, by the way, is saying that she's praying for President Trump. She's lighting candles all over the city in her house. She's got one in the window so he can find his way home. And she feels so bad for President Trump. He's just lost his way.
Nancy Pelosi is a devout member of the Catholic Church, Chuck.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a devout supporter of abortion. I'm not quite sure how.
It's just all over the place. You can't really pin her down, can you?
I'm not quite sure.
But she's a master politician. That's what they keep saying. She's brilliant as a politician.
I think Nancy Pelosi was brilliant as a politician. I think at this point, there's some dementia setting in.
Well,
I'm not saying that to be mean. You hear her talk, I mean, she talks about President Bush and she's going to bring psychics to the Capitol. And I mean, some crazy stuff comes out of her.
Well, I'm 78. I kind of get where she's coming from, you know.
But
I'm older than most of these people who are running for president or running a country.
But you, my friend, have still maintained your marbles.
Well, that's because I think young.
You do.
No, I'm not.
And you have not yet to come up with the Chuck Woolery versus Corn Pop story.
No, but I'm working on one.
Do you have a story about you and Corn Pop?
No, I don't. I don't.
How about you and Esther Williams?
Esther Williams. I have a story about Esther Williams. I remember going to L.A. Country Club for an event. L.A. Country Club's it's the biggest kind of, established country club in
the snob fest.
It's what?
The snob fest.
It is. Yeah. It's really where all the snobs are. Bel Air's where all the stars are.
That's where my uncle was at.
And
all the snobs go.
People who are in the industry are not allowed to join Los Angeles Country Club. It's that exclusive. They literally do not want anyone who's a writer, producer, actor. They don't want them in their club and they will not allow them in their club. However, you can be a guest at their club. And this evening was something that featured Esther Williams. She was the keynote speaker at an event at Los Angeles Country Club. And she showed up, and I happened to be in the doorway at the time. And she showed up in this flowing kind of outfit that was very attractive. She was an older woman at the time, but it had elephant legs. So elephant legs are those great big billowy kind of legs at the bottom of a dress. But it wasn't a dress. They were pants.
So they would like a not, jumpsuit.
They would not let her in the building.
Because she had pants on.
Because she had pants on. I mean, you had to look really close to make sure they were pants, but they were two legs, and they were, you know, they were pants. So they would not let the keynote speaker in because she was not dressed appropriately for the L.A. Country Club.
Esther Williams takes a lot of heat, doesn't she? And most people don't even know who she is. And here she's being compared to Corn Pop. Now she's thrown out of the country club. Yeah, the woman just got no respect, did she?
She was like an Olympic swimmer or something, I think.
She was. Well, back to Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi says...
Now, wait a minute. Why do you think Nancy Pelosi would come out and say that she's praying for Donald Trump? Why do you think she would say that?
Because she's trying to make herself look good.
Is that moral superiority kind of thing where I'm far better?
All Democrats are morally superior.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's set the table right now. All Democrats are morally superior to you or to me.
Well, why is that? How do they get there?
Because we are morally inferior people because we believe in freedom.
Oh, geez. Now, come on. You can do better than that.
I think it's as honest as that. And we don't subscribe to the Saul Alinsky rule of radicals.
Mm-hmm.
So since we do not subscribe to Saul Alinsky, we are morally inferior people.
You know, it's really interesting that so many people, so many names that are floating around today that have been floating around for like 8-9 years that were never heard of before. People just didn't know who they were unless you were really politically adroit. And Saul Alinsky's one of those names. George Soros is another one of those names. I mean, these nefarious people who really are here to not only damage our country, but also damage the world. with their socialist policies and ideas.
What about Frank Davis? Is that, do I have the name?
Well, Frank Marshall Davis.
Frank Marshall Davis.
Yeah, in Chicago. And it's really interesting. Chicago is kind of like Germany. And let me explain that. Every bad political idea that's ever imposed itself on the world came from Germany, came from Hegel, came from
Absolutely.
Marx. I mean, everything bad came from Germany. Well, everything bad comes from Chicago. What is that all
right,
about?
Here in the U.S. It is our, it's our little Germany.
Yeah, it's really an interesting parallel.
Nancy Pelosi says that she's willing to give up control of the House.
Yeah, right. I'm sure that's
Donald
true.
Trump. Now,
they're not willing to give up control of power for anything.
So yeah, I mean, come on. Does anybody believe for a minute that Nancy Pelosi wants to give up that gavel? She sleeps with that thing.
I'm sure there is a part of her constituency who would say, yeah, she's so, you know, self-sacrificing that she would be happy to do this for the country. But she didn't really say she wants to do it for the country. She wants to do it for the Constitution.
Here's a quote from her. It doesn't matter. Our first responsibility is protect and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Have you ever heard so much talk about from Democrats about the Constitution in the last 3 weeks? My God, all of a sudden it's like they discovered it exists.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when you look at the Bill of Rights, there are 10 original amendments to the Bill of Rights, as there are 10 commandments in the Bible.
Well,
you will notice the Democrats actually celebrate the 5 commandments and the 5 amendments because they don't like all 10 of either. They pick and choose. We're going to defend the Constitution. But their idea of defending the Constitution, think about it. It's not the First Amendment. You've got Kamala Harris saying that Donald Trump should have his Twitter account closed. He doesn't have the right to First Amendment. It isn't the Second Amendment they're defending because you have Beta Boy O'Rourke who says, hell yes, I'm going to come to your house and take your AR-15.
Yeah.
So what part of the Constitution are they focused on? The Emolument Clause. Because that's one of the really big features of the Constitution is the Emolument Clause.
Has anyone ever been convicted under the Emolument Clause ever?
No.
No, of course.
And just so people understand the Emolument Clause, it basically is that the president's not allowed to use his position for personal financial
to ingratiate himself.
Now, Kamala Harris came out on Twitter this weekend, Chuck, and said this president...
Wait. You just rolled over that like it was not important. In other words, you cannot make money while you're president off of any other endeavors, right?
Correct.
And yet all of them end up being millionaires by the time they leave. Thank God we've got a billionaire in there now that doesn't need it.
Well, he's the first guy who's ever come into the White House and is worth less money now than he was the day he walked in.
That's right. Yeah, and probably will be worth less when he leaves.
But that's the first time. Clinton's came in broke, are worth hundreds of millions. The Obamas came in with a couple of $100,000 of wealth, are now worth hundreds of millions. And this guy's lost several billion dollars by being the president.
And they want to tack him under the Emoluments Clause. It's a joke.
Well, here's the reason. Because foreign dignitaries are coming to Washington, D.C. and staying
in his hotel. Yeah, right.
Well, yes.
Mar-a-Lago.
And at Mar-a-Lago. Well, the voice you just heard was that of Richie Greenberg, who's our guest today, Chuck. Richie Greenberg is from San Francisco, the once beautiful city that I really used to enjoy, San Francisco. And he ran for mayor of San Francisco back in 2018. He made the tactical error of running as a conservative Republican.
It was an error. It was definitely not an error.
Well, Richie, welcome to the show. So we've been talking about Nancy Pelosi here, who's now become a great constitutional scholar.
And who loves the Founding Fathers.
Yes. Loves the Founding Fathers.
I mean, it really is. We're all three laughing, but it is laughable.
It certainly is, and thank you for having me here this morning.
Happy to have you, Richie.
Nancy Pelosi is somewhat of an icon here in the city. She wins every 2 years. You know, she's up for election, re-election right now next year, the primary in March, and then again in November is the final, but every 2 years. And I think most people don't realize that she even has to run. And yeah, every 2 years, that's the position.
Well, she's like an Adler, is the same way in New York. She's in one of those red or blue areas, blue districts. It's never going to vote for anybody but a Democrat.
Yeah, and she typically wins 80, 83, 85% mm-hmm. Of the vote each time. And so anyone running against her, it's more than an uphill battle. I mean, it's just Sisyphean task. There's no way. But people, candidates come out of the woodwork further left of her or to the right of her, and they put on really tough, hard-fought campaigns. Like right now, we've got five candidates that are all challenging her right now.
On the Democrat side?
No, two on the Republican and three or four on the to the left of her, Democrat. Yeah, both sides.
Can you be to the left of Nancy Pelosi?
So, if I can mention names, yes, sure. there are two candidates that are both aspiring or conspiring, if you want to use that word, with the AOC group, with the squad.
I was going to say that's where you got to go. I mean, you've got to go really far left.
That's right. And so these two, one gentleman, 45-year-old Shahid Batar, a nice guy. I've met him multiple times. But he goes into this mode that, you know, he is channeling AOC or they're in cahoots somewhere, and he supports Ilhan Omar.
Well, they all channel Marx, so just, you know,
well, okay,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
hard. It's
yeah,
not
yeah.
difficult.
Right. So that's one gentleman, and he talks about the Green New Deal, open borders, Medicare for all this, you know. Mm-hmm. And the other challenger is Agatha, 27-year-old Brazilian-American. Who I'm going to be meeting later this week just to try and feel her out a little bit and see where she's coming from. But she also talks very, very similar, although she's into tech. And she now I think she's become sort of famous in that she's trying to fundraise using Bitcoin. And that's what she's doing. So those are the two that are running further left. But regardless, my prediction, and pretty much anyone here in the city that's following politics even fairly closely, is going to know that Pelosi is going to win hands down. I mean, she doesn't even have to acknowledge that she's running right now. And she doesn't, there's no active campaign going on. There's no signage on storefronts. So she's going to run over them, you know, 80, 85.
She doesn't have to work for it. So let me ask you something, Rich. I mean, you're right there in the heart of San Francisco, which is.
I am.
And San Francisco wasn't always a completely left-wing city, was it?
No, in fact, as part of my pitch for my mayor's run last year, mm-hmm. is we talked about how from approximately 1906 all the way to 1964, five mayorship administrations were all conservative; they were all Republicans. Mm-hmm. And we had big works programs. We had big buildings, all City Hall and Civic Center, and all this was all built under Republican administration. Then after that, that's when we started in 64 and onwards, they started meddling with this. And you had the Democrats got voted in, and then what do you have?
Well, Haight-Ashbury.
You had assassinations.
I was there for that.
Were you? Wow.
Oh, yeah, I was there for Haight-Ashbury.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, a little bit before my time, but yeah, I wish I was there too in a sense. Yeah, but yeah, Haight-Ashbury, that's about a mile from where I live right here. I'm in the northwest corner of San Francisco, real close to Presidio. But yeah, after the Democrats were voted in, and it just continued worse and worse and worse, election by election, with the assassinations we had with all just leftist and overrun, and then you see what we have now today with the out of control rampant drug use and homelessness and skyrocketing home prices.
Let me ask you something, Richie. I mean, this is not unique to San Francisco. There are several of those cities: Portland, Seattle, here in Austin, Texas. They're experiencing the same kind of problem. What is the answer to this? What do you think is the, because government's got to get involved. It will get involved. It's going to be the answer to the problem. So right. can government actually answer this problem or solve
this? This is a great question. It's posed to all of us all the time. Mm-hmm. And what seems to happen, though, over the past year or so, the answer is evolving. That what I thought, or what some of us would have thought a year ago, may need more drastic answers now. And what we're seeing is that the top-down mayors, the supervisors, we call the Board of Supervisors here, not the City Council. We have 11 supervisors that are elected within the district. San Francisco is divided up into 11
districts. This is usually, a lot of people are confused. A lot of times they say it's the mayor or it's this. It's usually the City Council where the problems lie.
Right, right. City Council, Board of Supervisors, they call it here. And yeah, it's actually both, because they're two different branches of the government, just like you have the three and the courts, just like presidential and legislative, right? The Congress, we too have that. And so the mayor who won in the special election last year, London Breed.
It's really odd. I have no idea. I know who the mayor of Chicago is. I know who the mayor of New York is. I have no idea who the mayor of San Francisco is.
Well, exactly. And part of that, part of that is because she is not doing any radical, extreme, even if it's a tough love kind of change in policy to make a mark that would go viral, that would go national. And so she's just flying under the radar. And part of that, we believe, is because she's up for election again. This was a short election season last year that was just to finish out the term of the mayor who passed away.
So she can run on I've done nothing.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can't hurt me because I haven't done anything.
Yeah, that's right. And that's it. It's like she's missing. If you remember seeing it within the last couple of weeks, some people in New York were targeting Bill de Blasio with the posters and flyers saying our mayor is missing. Have you seen this man? It's very similar here. All that the mayor here seems to be doing is going to park openings, ribbon cuttings, things like that. Mm-hmm. When you've got all people overdosing, ODing and dying on the streets and she's nowhere to be found. She is completely, I hate saying inept, but not doing anything to address this. And she's not calming the city, not calming anyone, and barely even reacting to anything that's happening. And the City Council, the Board of Supervisors also, they are off guard. They don't know what to do. They are overwhelmed, and they don't really know how to handle this.
That but they had the time to go after, but they did find the time to decide that the NRA is a terrorist organization.
Yes, and the specific supervisor, the city council member of my district where I live, is the woman that did that. That was Catherine Stephanie. There are many, many people that were critical of that on all sides. We have
so
a lot more.
San Francisco is the Wild West without guns.
At this point, yes, it's the Wild West with needles. That's pretty much what it's turned into, with the needles and poop and the apps.
Right,
the
so we've got apps. We have homeless everywhere and needles everywhere, and the only thing pressing to the mayor and council is calling the NRA a terrorist organization?
That's part of it, yeah. But, it's a distraction. Everything that the mayor's office and the Board of Supervisors office does seems to be a distraction.
But there seems to be no pressure. I mean, everyone who is listening at all around the country knows the problems San Francisco has because, number one, it's a beautiful city.
I agree.
And it has all the promise of, the beauty and wealth and everything else. I mean, it's just like the perfect place. And yet it's turned into a crap hole, pardon the expression, but it has because of these lack of these policies, whatever they would be, and they will not clean up the streets. Somebody came out, it shocked me the other day. They suggested using fire hoses to get rid of the poop on the streets. And so they said, oh, no, fire hoses are racist. And I went, what? I mean, it's just so they are ignoring the problem that's right in front of their face to the whole nation, not just the city.
Yeah, that's right. They're ignoring it. They wish it would go away. They have proposals that are preposterous.
What are one of their proposals in order to-
that we need to build more affordable or low income housing to be able to house these
in San Francisco? Affordable housing? That's like an oxymoron.
Right. That's it. That is among the most ridiculous, preposterous proposals. Because first of all,
you know, Richie, it's interesting because LA went through this when I was living there, and Santa Monica became the home of the homeless. And they really had a real problem. They didn't know what to do. So they said, okay, we're going to start building places for these people to live in. And they did. And they would go and stay for a month and leave. And they found out it was a real interesting psychological thing. They found out these people didn't feel comfortable in four walls. They really wanted to be in a tent. They wanted to be mobile. They wanted to do whatever they wanted to do. They had a freedom living outside. They'd gotten so used to it that they really didn't want to be confined into what would be a normal apartment or a house or whatever. And it was just an odd situation. I remember this so vividly when I lived out there in Venice.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And there's a, statistically, when the homeless outreach organizations working together with some of the departments here in the city, city offices, they go around and they survey. They look to see who is homeless. And they categorize them. And one significant category is, as you said, people who just like to be off the grid. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be part of the system.
It's obviously everybody, but it's a group.
Yeah. They don't want assistance. They don't want to be held accountable. They don't want to be in the database. They feel they don't need any of that. Just give me a tent and I'll fend for myself. I'll go live in a park. I'll go live under a bridge. And I'll be happy because I'm with other people that are like-minded. They feel the same way. And that's a significant portion. And those are the among the more difficult to displace because they want to be left alone and they don't want to be held accountable either on both sides.
Now, is it fair to call these people mentally ill or is there nothing wrong with wanting to be free and live under
well, a I'm sure that with there's a lot of overlapping in categorizing as mentally ill, because then you've got those that are ill as a result of being addicted to drugs.
If others you watch that television are, today, if you watch Netflix at all, we're all in mentally ill, according to them.
Exactly. Right. I'm ill. The three of us are ill.
Right.
But yeah, that's another issue, too, with the illness. But these are not the ones that are walking the streets like zombies right around downtown Financial District, Union Square, Market Street, all where all the tourists are mostly walking. These are not the same people. The ones that are off the grid in the parks, the ones that are like the zombies, those are the drug addicts. And then others that scream and yell at either themselves or imaginary people, or they run in front of a bus, drop their pants and poop in front of a bus. That I've been on buses when that's happened. You know, the driver slams on his brakes to avoid any stuff.
They walk out in front of a bus.
Yes.
And pull their pants down.
And poop.
Is this a common occurrence?
Yes. It is. It's documented. It's not me. I mean, I'm swearing it happens.
Do they want to get run over by the bus, or what's the motivation?
There's a group that do want to get hit by the bus, hoping they can get into hospital and get. A lot of them are on heroin or other drugs, and this is a way for them to get put into the hospital emergency room and get shot up with whatever drugs will make them feel better.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a method of doing it. If they can't afford or if they can't get the drugs, this is one way to do it. Get injured so that way they'll pump you up with morphine and what have you. Yeah.
So we are a country of laws, and I would assume that San Francisco is a city of laws. How does that work? How do they work with the Board of Supervisors and the mayor and the police department? Are the police department, like a lot of places in blue states and blue cities, they're just kind of on the outs with them? They don't... they restrict what they're able to prosecute.
And you're missing one more piece to the puzzle there. That's the district attorney and public defender's office. So that's the other one, the fourth.
Now, please don't tell me that they're basically the same office.
Have you heard about what's happening in the race for November?
We have not, but we're very familiar with the fact that George Soros has been going around and backing district attorneys everywhere so that he can eviscerate our laws. What's happening in San Francisco?
So here in November, also next month, renewing the current mayor's lease for the next 8 years, unfortunately, we have, for the first time in over 100 years, an open race for district attorney. And so there are four candidates running. One of them is currently a public defender. So that person is going to sort of defect from the public defender side to the district attorney side. And what this gentleman is saying is that it will bolster everything negative that you've heard about what not to do as a effective district attorney, making DUIs a victimless crime and not really prioritize them, finding every way you can to let criminals out and not jail them, because we have to be more compassionate. We have to be understanding of what drives criminals to do what they do. There are proposals to have like mediation meetings rather than sending someone to jail.
Well, this is a recipe for disaster.
It is. And they would bring together the victim and the perpetrator to sit down with a mediator and kumbaya this, where you would like hug, shake hands, restitution, what can we do, and then let the criminal go.
So we're going to replace trials with encounter groups.
Yeah, good way to put it, yes. That's what, and so that, coupled with a police department that is underfunded, overwhelmed, and constantly attacked and threatened of having further funding cuts by the department, by the city council, the supervisors, board of supervisors. You know that we're, if not the only, but one of the only large cities in America that the police are not armed with tasers. We do not have tasers here.
Why?
Why? Do they want everybody to just get shot?
They refuse to allow another method of dealing with a violent criminal. So what they're trying to do now, and they have done in the last year, is to really emphasize de-escalation tactics instead. Talk to the perpetrator. Talk to the criminal. Talk them down. Talk them out of it. And even though it even went to a ballot measure, and it passed, still, the supervisors are the ones with the key to the lockbox. They're the ones that funnel the funds and allocate it to the police department. They have refused in every way possible to hand over the money. And so our cops are either forced with a decision of, in a sense, retreating and trying to talk the perpetrator down, or to shoot them. And so that's another whole piece to the puzzle of San Francisco.
Do you have a hard time hiring cops in San Francisco?
Absolutely, yes. And we have a problem now that many of them who have been around on the force for a while,
They're leaving,
they're retiring, they're getting close to retirement age, so they don't want to mess up at all and miss out on their retirement benefits package. So,
San Francisco got a lot of money. You would think they would. Do they have a lot of money for these retirement programs for all of this?
Well, you know, we don't have a lot of money. We owe a lot of money. Hmm. You see, and so the biggest portion of the city's budget is going towards paying for city employees and for pensions and retirement benefits. Mm-hmm. It's 32,000 people. Work for the city itself. Mm-hmm. It's one of the largest employers in the city, is the city itself. And it's growing by leaps and bounds. And so the supervisors keep coming up with more potential departments for whatever need. And then an oversight committee to supervise that department. And each one...
Let me ask you something. Has it gotten to the point where government is now voting for government?
I would say so. They're rooting for it. That's it. They want more. It's this power grab, this classic, by apparent definition, socialist, communist kind of government. You know, people, or I'm sorry, Trump, not just people, our President Trump talks about how the United States will never be a socialist country. Well, San Francisco is a socialist city.
Well, I got news for you. California has become a socialist state.
Thank you, Newsom.
There's no question about that. Well, yep. Governor Brown had a little bit to do with that, too. I mean, it amazes me that people keep thinking that this is so new, that the Democrats are just all of a sudden have become Marxists and they don't understand why, even though they won't use that hyperbolic term. But it's been this way for years.
It has.
It's just they've hidden it. And now, because of Trump, oddly enough, he pressed the button that just brought them all out of the closet.
Well,
in
a way, you could say that, of course. But also, there's no pushback. And that's the problem. There's no pushback within the ranks.
But I can't imagine that the city is happy with the way things are going. I mean, it does belong to the people. Do they just not care?
There's a large number of people, big percentage, that agree with what's happening. And they will vote. Yeah, they vote in leftist candidates
Why
for office.
Why do you think that is? There's got to be a reason for that. That they don't mind. There's poop all over the streets. There's needles everywhere. There's homeless. You know,
I know. And the candidates that are
perfectly acceptable.
It's obviously not acceptable, but they're not willing to do anything. They don't care. Many of them don't.
You're talking about the citizens of San Francisco don't care.
Well, many don't have a vested interest here. And what I mean is there's a big divide between the homeowners, condos and private homes versus renters. And I believe as of last year, the percentage was 72% of registered voters are renters.
Really?
And so because of that, how could anyone propose and pass any ballot measure that's going to potentially restrict or hurt the renters, adding taxes on apartments, anything like that? They will instantly vote down, and it's gone. There are some individuals that because of that they are renters, they don't care if what's coming up for vote, a ballot measure that's going to stick it to the homeowners, raising taxes, property taxes, even business taxes, they don't care either. A lot of them think that taxes are good. They say that's how we're funding our schools, funding our programs, funding this and that. We need more money for the homeless because clearly we don't have enough is what they think. And so they don't mind paying more. A lot of it doesn't even affect them. So they're forcing this issue. They're passing the buck to others.
It really is becoming like a socialist country.
Yeah.
That is, you get rid of the middle class, you've got a dependent class, and you've got very wealthy people. And that's it. There's no middle.
Now, I'm curious, the San Francisco, there's a lot of big tech wealth there, right?
Of course. It's legendary.
But you have the Democrats now, especially led by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, that are declaring war on the billionaire class, saying that they're going to make it illegal to be a billionaire.
Let's be honest. They declare war on banks and they use banks. They don't really declare war on anybody.
Yeah,
they say they're declaring war on them, but they never really do it.
Well, and what can you do? I mean, you can't squeeze the money out of the tech companies. You can't pick up their buildings and shake them upside down and have all the money come out, mostly because they have multiple offices. You know, San Francisco is known for having a really great concentration of either the founders or head offices of all these tech companies. Twitter, they have Facebook, Oracle, Salesforce. They're all based right here. Or it's their branch office. But a lot of that wealth is spread around the country or other countries around the globe as well. So where do you target? Where are you using? Which location is the emphasis on how to tax, you know? But last year, there was a ballot measure that actually passed. And that was to put an additional tax on the highest earning tech companies. And that still has not been implemented. It immediately got brought into court and is just sitting there right now, deliberating both sides and posturing. That's what it's come down to now, is that the locals the local powers that be are targeting the more wealthy companies, not the individuals, but the companies, because we don't here we don't have the city does not have the power to create its own city or county based tax like New York. You have a state of you have a federal federal return, federal tax return, state of New York, and then there are municipalities. But here we don't have that, so they have to find some other creative ways.
Well, they are creative normally to extract money from you. They always seem to find a way.
Yep. And that's actually what's causing small businesses to leave. If you've heard, we have a mass exodus of small mom and pop shops and restaurants. They're leaving town in droves.
One of my favorite little restaurants is in San Francisco.
Which one's that?
It's called the Seven Hills.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one.
It's a little tiny place. It's like in a 20-foot storefront.
Yeah,
and the
well,
guy
they
is
are
a great chef.
That kind of restaurant or cafe is facing incredible amount of pressure to be able to survive.
Why is that? What's the, is it the rent? What is it? The regulations?
Yep, it's all that. It's the rent. That what's happened is greedy landlords are doubling, tripling, quadrupling the rent, which makes it clearly unaffordable for small business owners to pay that. We just had an announcement yesterday that one of the two really popular Indian-style restaurants has just closed, and they cited their triple or quadrupling the rent plus the minimum wage, $15. You know, we don't have a tipped type of minimum wage like you see in other cities. And
so restaurant workers get $15 plus their tips?
Yeah, and up. $15, no matter what you do, $15 minimum wage, period. So you pay $15, which makes that unaffordable.
And you still get your tips on top of that.
You share this tip sharing.
Okay.
When I lived in Los Angeles, I realized that there were restaurants, all kinds of independent restaurants, and there's some restaurants that like El Fornaio that, you know, they're little franchises and so on. They're kind of exclusive franchises.
Yeah.
But we always laughed. He said, well, you know, it's really expensive to go to El Fornaio, for instance. You say, well, wonder why it's so expensive in Beverly Hills. Well, because you're paying for square footage, not food. That's why.
That's right. That's right. And here, besides the square footage, you have the $15 minimum. So if you have a staff of 10, there's $150 an hour, plus benefits if you're going to do that. Plus, with the increasing amount of danger and poops and poop and needles and homeless begging outside, you see traffic, foot traffic going into these restaurants are dropping drastically. Mm-hmm. And so that all those pressures right there, plus other requirements on staff shortage, labor shortage. A lot of people here cannot afford to live here anymore.
Well, do the small businesses in San Francisco have a co-op, a group that can lobby? What do you call them? Not the city council, but
The Board of Supervisors.
The Board of Supervisors. Do they ever lobby them or say, look, you know, this is killing us. Can you help us here?
There are civic groups and the Chamber of Commerce and the Hotel Association. They all regularly talk and lobby and complain. But it usually falls on deaf ears. You know, I've talked to both those organizations over the year. And they don't, you know, they're stuck. They're stuck because they don't have.
I personally don't think they care, and the reason for that is it goes back to this whole socialist kind of blueprint, and that is I don't think California cares that business is leaving California and that citizens are leaving California. They're leaving San Francisco or L.A. or any place else because it just gets rid of that middle class, and then you got the two different classes: the lower class, the dependent class. And then, you know, the elites. So that's the whole blueprint for this to be working. So it's really working in their favor, not in the favor of the city, not in the favor of a small business, but it's working in the favor of government.
That's right. As they
reconstruct your city and your state.
Yeah. The fundamental difference between conservative and liberal in one aspect is where us conservatives and Republicans, we want to lift people up, right? To give the opportunity, the best opportunity to succeed. where what do they want to do? They want to bring everybody down to the lowest level, lowest common denominator. And, well, and we're seeing
dependent on government.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what's happening here. So that's another fundamental reason why people vote in those candidates running for office for either the mayor, board of supervisors, who are protecting those who are the downtrodden, those who want to be dependent on the government. It's perfect. It's a study right here in San Francisco. It's exactly what we Republicans, what we conservatives criticize and fault. They are doing that here, and they have for years.
And they're doing it in L.A.
So there's 11 members of the Board of Supervisors.
Supervisors, yeah.
I'm assuming 100% of them run as Democrats?
Yes. Well, over the years, there's sometimes been a Green candidate. But yeah, they're all Democrats. They're all at this point. They're all leftists, and there's different flavors here of leftist candidates, of Democrats, I should say. You have the moderates and the progressives.
So out of those 11, how many are socialists or communists?
In my opinion, all 11. At this point, all 11 are, and that was solidified.
You just said something that's very interesting, and you don't even know it, because I noticed it happening today.
Yeah, what was
about
that?
2-3 years ago, yeah. I can remember listening to Rush Limbaugh. And at that time, I was using the word progressive a lot because I'd studied Hegel.
Yeah.
I'd realized where the origin was and what it was, and Woodrow Wilson and on up until they changed their name to liberal.
Yeah.
And so I knew that this progressive wave was coming, and I kept thinking, when are people going to start calling them what they are and understand what they are? I still don't believe people understand what the word progressive means, or I mean, maybe the word, but not what the movement of progressivism is. I don't think
they think it's insurance sold by fraud. Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, they co-opted a positive word and turned it into a negative. But
right.
it's been around since the late 1800s, this word and this movement.
So, yeah, but
so now even Limbaugh is saying progressive because we're forced into saying it because it just becomes a predominant word, and that's. And if now people would just understand it, because when Coolidge came in, the progressives were really strong in this country. It was huge. It was a massive movement that it was started with Teddy Roosevelt, went right through Woodrow Wilson, and they were running on progressive. By the time they got through with Woodrow Wilson, people hated the word. They knew what it was. They didn't want any part of it. So liberal became the word. Mm-hmm. And they just changed and became liberals. Now they're back to progressive. Nothing is new under the sun.
Well, here in San Francisco, they never really used the word liberal. It's always been progressive or moderate.
Right?
Or moderate.
Uh-huh.
And so whenever there's a candidate debate or a forum or interviews on TV or in newspapers, that is the characteristic.
So that's been a word that's been around in San Francisco for a long time, you're saying?
Exactly, yes.
Before Hillary
calls herself a progressive.
What? Yeah,
I'm sorry, Mark, calls herself a progressive.
Well, I mean, Hillary Clinton really reignited the word again in the 2012 election.
Yeah.
But that's who really, you know, lit that candle again. But prior to that, I didn't even know what it meant. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
By today's current standard, Pelosi would be considered moderate, not progressive here in San Francisco.
So when you have a debate in San Francisco, it's between the crazy candidate and the really, really crazy candidate.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well.
Because here, the progressives would be AOC and the squad, and the candidates running against Pelosi that are farthest left, those are the progressives with progressive values. You see, Pelosi is being attacked for not being progressive, for not being on board
deal. If you take the word progressive and put an equal sign beside it, what does progressive equal?
In San Francisco, in today's day and age, I would say...
In any language, what does progressive mean?
I would say like socialist, communist, Marxist.
Exactly right. It's socialist. That's what it means. These people are saying we're socialist. We won't use the word. We'll use the word progressive. But that's what we are, and that's what we've always been. And now... Eat it.
Yeah, and they hide behind that label, you know, the whole labeling and identity politics. They love this way, this progressive term. And people in the street, you just talk to them, you know, waiting in line or on the bus, and, oh, yeah, well, are you progressive? Mm-hmm. You know, well, I believe in progress, but I'm not that kind of socialist progressive. No.
Richie pointed something out, Chuck, that I think is a structural issue. And you said that 70%, so is 70% of the population renters?
That's correct. 72% as of last year.
So yeah. Think about this for a minute. From a mentality, so I'm just speaking of a mindset. There's owner mentalities and there's renter mentalities.
Yep.
When an owner moves in, an owner looks at the neighborhood. What can I do to make this better? This is where I have an investment. How can I preserve the investment that I've made in this home? How can I make this my long-term place? All these things. When a renter moves into a space, the renter moves in with one foot already out the door.
Or never in.
Right. They've got one foot out the door because the renter is temporary. The exactly. mindset is temporary. It's not a permanent mindset when you're the renter.
Exactly. So
if 72% of the population has a transient mindset, then how can you ever get anything structurally done for the good of that city?
Well, there's another factor. San Francisco, we pride ourselves in never being just simple. There's always some complexity and convoluted things, right? So throw in this, that for the most part, the majority of the approved and built buildings, apartments, right, that are being built in parts of the city to accommodate the influx of new residents, right, they're all renters now. But to maximize the profits for the developers, for the builders, they're pretty much only building one bedroom or even studio apartments with no parking, garage.
Mm-hmm. And what are those rent for?
So anywhere from $3,500 to $5,000. So these are being occupied by single people, young graduates from college. They're working in the tech industry. And they're either walking or taking a bicycle to work.
And they're spending $5,000 to rent a bedroom.
In a larger, it's a little bit lower than that. It depends on the kind of house. We're in my area where I live, this is where it feels more suburban. It's still San Francisco. But there are larger homes that are like two or three stories, like Victorians. And they just divide them up and put in as many people that are willing to live in a communal kind of home. But the new building construction, they're all studios or one bedrooms. So what is that doing? That is pushing out families, couples with children, elderly and disabled, because they're not billing them large enough and the units big enough, and no parking. So you have elderly and people and families need cars. And so that is changing the demographic as well. So it's bringing down the voter base. Ultimately, that's what we're looking at, right? The voter base is now going lower and lower and lower, and they're renters. And a lot of the lower kids out of college in their early 20s often vote for this progressiveness, this progressive values, and they love Bernie Sanders.
That's what they've learned in college.
They're turning the city into Madrid.
I don't know Madrid, but I'll take your word for it.
Madrid, you know that, Chuck, the very European, yeah. Very, very pedestrian, very renter-based, yeah. Enormous rents for these.
It's a European, model. Yeah. It's not just Madrid, it's a European model.
Yeah, and now they want to take one of the main thoroughfares here, Market Street, and a few others, and close it to cars as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is the European model.
Well, you do have that famous cable car that people can...
Yeah, we do. Two lines.
Run up and down, yes.
Yeah, but we don't normally take that for two reasons. First, it's filled with tourists. And second, it's really expensive. It's like $6 or $7 one-way ride.
It's ridiculous. It's not legitimate transportation. It's a tourist.
No, it's so tourist. Richie,
what are you doing now?
So right now, I'm still very involved with politics in a sense. I am a delegate on the San Francisco GOP, the Republican Party Central Committee. I'm also a delegate on the state of California, California GOP. We just had our convention a couple of weeks ago down in Indian Wells, Palm Springs area.
I know that one.
And I help other candidates that are running for office just to understand what's going on, what's required, I have my finger on the pulse of the political scene here. I've been interviewed different news networks, Fox. We did a video on homelessness a couple of weeks ago. So like this, I give my opinion. I tell it straight. I say what's happening here in San Francisco.
Well, Richie, we always talk about the pendulum swinging. Do you think the pendulum will ever swing back?
Well, if it does, it's because of people like myself and all of us activists that are trying hard to really get the word out to the public. That,
you know, I was a conservative in Los Angeles and show business. I could never reveal that. No one knew that until I left.
Well,
because you know, I wouldn't work anymore. I mean, it literally got to the point where if you expressed your opinions and values and however they were, if they were contrary to Hollywood, they wouldn't hire you.
Yeah, I understand. I hear that. But, you know, there's 32,000 registered Republicans here in the city. 32,000 actual Republicans, 160,000 no party preference. So they're the ones that are declined the state. They don't want to say on the voter files what their voter what party they lean towards.
So they can't vote in primaries, right?
They've actually changed that to allow open primaries on the Democrat side. On the Republicans, we don't, but on the Democrats, yes. And so that was to skirt around and get more people involved that way and hopefully steal some of the Republican conservative voters. But, you know, at
so
the
far, point... So what are the Republicans sitting in a room going, well, should we do this or not? I mean,
yeah.
Still mulling.
But, you know, we don't have to run only for office. We can also do ballot measures. So we can support and oppose ballot measures. And that we're also very involved with. So if we're not succeeding in the polls with getting a candidate in, we can still deal with ballot measures and help the voter base support or oppose some measure.
Can you name any successes you've had in the last 5, 6, 10 years?
Well, on the side of candidates, no. Unfortunately, no. We try, you know, we've got...
I understand. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm just... trying to be
it does sound like a good point, Chuck. It is a bit of a tilting at windmill kind of thing.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
How but do you not get frustrated and just head to Texas?
Well, but you know, Texas being Californicated now, they're complaining. They're saying, "Do not vote. Do not bring your California to us."
I'm the only conservative that moved to Texas.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, though. We're slowly losing a voter base here in San Francisco. The Republicans are, because many of them are. Moving out of state, and they're going to other states. They're still staying Republican, but we're losing that too. We're down to
where are they going to?
Mostly the close neighboring states: Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, and Texas. Texas is a big draw, especially because of the tech industry that's moving over there, the no state income tax, and deals that the government in Texas are doing to entice. California and San Francisco companies to leave. Every once in a while, we hear another company has left. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the reality of it here. We meet the SF GOP Republican Party meets once a month to go over ballot measures and other issues. We have candidates for office come in and talk to us and pitch us. We have very we're really proud, in a sense, of having an 18-year-old running for the Board of Supervisors. This particular kid, call him a kid, he just turned 18 back in May, immediately registered as a Republican, and threw his hat in, his name in the hat to run for office. And so those are really encouraging stories, and we keep trying to find those and to support them and to give them counseling in a positive way. And to give them insight into what it's like to run for office here. And that's what we're really hoping for.
I've noticed something when I don't know if you've noticed this, Chuck. Last time you were in San Francisco, I noticed that the homeless there are becoming very aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When there's no law, they're going to be aggressive. I mean, that's I wanted to tamp that down.
The thing is, the aggressiveness is... split between those who are just that have that kind of personality versus those who are mentally ill that have some sort of a problem. They're high on something. But ultimately what it takes to clamp down on that is to have law enforcement arrest and bring them to
prosecute.
Court.
Pardon me. There's another side of that. And, it's
and like I said, we have those
four. You can arrest them if they don't prosecute them. What difference does it make?
Right. We have those four district attorney candidates that all four of them are fairly weak on prosecuting anything like that. Mm-hmm. They're outgunned by a very well-funded, very well-trained public defender's office. And it's going nowhere. Right now, we are all surviving here on being good humans and doing the best we can by being, hopefully, you know, walking down the street. It's not going to be door-to-door gangs going in and busting up houses and robbing people. You know, we are not at that point. I hope to God we'll never be at that point. But right now, there's nothing stopping someone. We have this Prop 47. Are you familiar with Prop 47?
No.
All right. This was a few years ago. I think it was 2014. It was voted on actually by the people of California. It was promoted as being a way to avoid the overcrowding of jails. So this particular proposition, what it does now is it says anything that is less than $950 in terms of value of what would be stolen is no longer a jailable offense. It's barely even a misdemeanor. If you are caught, if you could be caught, it just winds up being a slap on the wrist and you're out. So why, what's that doing now is this is why you may hear that San Francisco has a tremendously high auto break-ins, property crime, 35,000 in a year of cars being smashed, windows smashed, especially in tourist areas. Because you have unsuspecting, unknowing, ill-advised tourists rent a car from the airport, come into the city, go to popular tourist areas like Fisherman's Wharf and around there. And these kids or gangs, they pray, they know, they can tell when a car is a rental car because maybe it has a barcode on the window, right? They go and they smash the window, go in there, pop the trunk and pull out bags and bags of these tourists' luggage, backpacks with computers in there, with money, with credit cards, and they grab everything. And then a few blocks away, they dump the bags and neighbors report online saying, hey, I found another bag, another dumped tourist backpack.
And there's just no cost. There's no cost of doing this.
Yeah, that's right. So they've learned, the criminals have even learned to avoid being caught with too much. They could even carry calculators with them and say, okay, the value of this plus the value of that plus the value of that is we can't risk that. So it's organized. You have one guy in a black hoodie and one of those wads that you can use to smash a window on a small bicycle will go by, target a bike, hit the bike and just, I'm sorry, hit the window of the car and ride away. Then a second person will come in and grab the bag out of the car, rifle through it, and dump it on the ground. Then a third person comes by and grabs the actual merchandise that's worth it and then leaves with that.
Right. So the second person can't be charged with breaking.
Yeah. The first is the breaker. The second one is pulling it out but doesn't possess it. The third person is the one that possesses it. But by that time, it's hard to trace it to that person. Right. Correct. Yep. And yeah, it's a whole technique. And many of them aren't even from San Francisco. They come in from Oakland and surrounding areas, East Bay. Yeah. So it becomes a organized crime.
So yeah. This would be a tough one for you because I'm sure you're
nothing's tough for me.
Well, I'm sure you're a big supporter of your city.
Of course. I love my city.
But do you recommend people visit San Francisco?
Visit, yes, because there are some areas that are beautiful. As you both have mentioned, it's a really great city. It's the natural beauty, the beaches, the hills, Golden Gate Park and Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, it's a wonderful place to come. The thing is, a lot of people today don't have street smarts and common sense to know what to do to avoid becoming a victim of a crime, that's where there needs to be a little bit more education. But whose job is it to educate, right? You know, you don't walk around flashing money. You don't go in many areas at all of the city. You should just not go there. Other areas, you don't want to have a cell phone to your ear and not have a full awareness of who's around you. And you certainly don't want to load up your car with valuables and then go park it in a dimly lit street in areas as well. Those are things that we've all learned. It has become part of our street smart. So when we go to other cities, whenever my wife and I, we travel to other states, we automatically know that never leave anything behind in the car. People look at us and say, what are you talking about? I'm just leaving my purse in the back seat. I'm like, no, you can't do that. It's inviting disaster. So a lot of people here from out of state, out of the country, don't realize the probability that they're going to be a victim.
But it's a shame to have to live like that.
It is. Yeah, yep, it is. I know. But that's,
well, thank you, Richie. Yeah. We really appreciate having you on the show. You've given us a lot of insight as to what's going on in San Francisco, and I'm not sure we can fix it, but you can try, that's for sure. And you seem to be a warrior on the front lines, and we appreciate you. We really do.
That's right, Chuck, Mark, great having me on. Thank you so much for bringing me on today.
It's been our pleasure. It really is. And folks, if you want to get in touch with Richie Greenberg and find out more about what he's doing and get involved, how would you do that?
You can go right to my website at richiegreenberg.org, and you can see the contact information and my position on things and links to media appearances.
All right.
We'll have links to that in the show notes at bluntforcetruth.com. Just look Excellent. For the episode with Richie Greenberg.
Okay, Chuck, Mark, thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for listening to Blunt Force Truth today. Pick us up on iTunes, Stitcher, and Westwood
Podcast One. Not Westwood.
I know. I go back too far with Norm Pattis, unfortunately. It's always going to be that to me, but it's Podcast One. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on Blunt Force Truth.